All righty, folks, welcome back. It is a rainy Monday edition of JJ After Dark. It's John Jastrzemski right here on The Fan. Unfortunately, no Subway Series Monday night. It'll be a day-night doubleheader Tuesday at Yankee Stadium, and this guy is basically everywhere on SNY these days. I see him in the hallway. He's got his beautiful new suits. He's giving me fashion advice. He also could give me some advice on how to run a baseball team. Jim Duquette, pre and post for the Mets over at SNY. He joins us here on The Fan. Jimmy, how you doing, my friend?
JJ, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Jim, I'm doing well, man. I know you actually get to hear me via the radio instead of hearing me yelling and screaming in the SNY newsroom, which I think is better off for your sake. Let's be honest.
Fair enough.
All right, Jim, let's get right to it. You were a GM for the New York Mets. You were a part of the Subway Series. Curious to get your take. First things first here. Did you like being a part of the Subway Series? Did you hate being a part of the Subway Series? What was your stance on it?
Well, I liked it for a couple of reasons. I liked it because, you know, the interleague I was a fan of. I liked the difference, the rivalry and the intensity of the rivalry. I mean, the parts I didn't like was, you know, we took our share of beatdowns from the Yankees, unfortunately. It was always one of those, like, oh, you know, it was always going to be a tough series. It always felt like it had greater importance than the one win or the one loss that you had in that particular night. But I will say this, the years that we did win, and, you know, a couple of them, we were, you know, like some of the games that you remember, you know, the Matt Franco, you know, hit off of, you know, pinch hit off of Mariano Rivera. And we were talking about Koo, the relief pitch who gets a hit off of Randy Johnson, ends up winning, you know, scoring a run, end up winning that game. Like some of the memorable Dave Malicki's game, you know, complete game. Some of those that really stand out. You go, all right, that's what it's all about. There are far too few of those, unfortunately. So, you know, I go back and forth on it, but I did like the intensity of the games and, you know, the difference playing the Yankees.
Well, you're right about that, Jim. I remember screaming from the upper deck at Shea Stadium when Koo hit that ball over Bernie Williams' head and then he's darting home on Randy Johnson. I remember that one well, but I was there for Luis Castillo in 2009, so I guess it all evens out. So, you know, I'm curious, they play six times or four times a year. Would it be more special if they just played once a year, three-game series, and they alternated between stadiums?
I think it would be great, and there had been a push for that, and there was a push for it a while ago. The problem has been, if you go back to the very beginning of this, if you were going to, and there's a little bit of stubbornness here too, but the very beginning of the interleague, I believe the first games were played at Yankee Stadium, or more games were played at Yankee Stadium. So it's always been the Mets' contention that if we're going to do one series for three games, that it would start at the Mets place. Well, that's never been the agreement that the Yankees had. And so when you come down to trying to get just one series of three, at least this is the way it was, I'd say, you know, 8-9 years ago. And I haven't heard the conversation since, but they just couldn't come to an agreement. So they decided, okay, well, at least we'll still do the home and home series, but we'll make it two games each.
All right, Jimmy, let's get to the Mets. They had a very good homestand against the San Francisco Giants and the Colorado Rockies. And to me, the most important development for them is the fact that they now have starting pitchers performing and going deep into games. Do you look at Mets, Vargas, and to me, the biggest key, if the Mets are going to be successful and they're going to be in contention, it's Noah Syndergaard. They need a lot more starts out of Noah Syndergaard like the one we saw here on Sunday.
Yeah, I completely agree. I believe that Mats is for real. I mean, I would love to see, you know, at some point when he's going 120 pitches, 122 like he did the other day, that is, you know, into the eighth. You know, we haven't quite seen that out of him yet, but I think that's coming. I do, and I think it's coming this year. Like, he has really, really impressed me with the way he's pitched, the way he's attacking the strike zone. So I think any of his struggles that we might have talked about at the beginning of the season, I think they're, for the most part, gone. Vargas has been way better. You have to give him a lot of credit for the way he's pitched. And, you know, I think there's no reason to think he can't continue it. It does come down to Noah. You're absolutely right. I felt like there were signs that he was pitching better after the Cincinnati game. There was another one or two that he had, you know, and I know that he had, like, I felt like there was three good ones, the fourth one that was not that great. And then he had one more, the fifth one, and that was where he struggled. And he started talking about his confidence. Seemed like he had lost his confidence a little bit. Since then, I feel like he's gotten himself back on track mechanically and more in line to home plate. He's locating a lot better. The fastball, curveball, changeup combination is really working well for him. He still hasn't found that feel for the slider, but I think there's plenty there to think that he's got it figured out too. So. And I don't think you're concerned, nor am I, about DeGrom and Wheeler. So I think if you were to look at their starting rotation, it's clearly, in my mind, trending up.
Jimmy Duquette, pre and post with the Mets. Check him out on SNY. Jim, is it basically going to come down to the month of June for Brody Van Wagenen to whether or not this team's going to be buying or selling at the deadline? Like, we look at this stretch of games. Yeah. The Mets are playing all these good teams. The Yankees, they got the Cubbies, they got the Braves, they got the Phillies. Do you kind of get the sense if you were the GM of this team right now, you'd be like in wait and see mode to see, you know, how this next month or so plays out before you kind of can decide what you're going to do?
Well, I think that's the right move. Like, listen, they're all in. Like Brody's basically saying, you know, they're expecting to win, and so there's nothing like unless they're 10 games under as they get close to the deadline. I don't think they're going to sell. But I do think they're going to try to buy and find an opportunity to buy. The problem, as you mentioned, I mean, this schedule, besides the Yankees, Cardinals, Braves, Cubs, Phillies, you know, that's, you know, and then Braves and then Yankees and then Phillies and then the All-Star break. Like, all of those teams are over 500. They're tough teams to play. So your answer about, you know, being a seller, you're right, will come on the field. But if he could pull off something before, and likely would be bullpen piece, at least for now, that might help you get through this tough period too, you know? So it's hard to make deals right now. I talked to a half a dozen GMs in the last 48 hours. They've said the conversations have just started to take place. Would you like to do a deal now? Sure, you're going to have to pay a heavy price, and I don't know if I would do what the asking price is right now.
Jim, let me ask you about Dominic Smith, because give him credit. Yep. You know, he appeared to be a failed prospect a year and a half ago, 2 years ago.
Yep.
And with the emergence of Pete Alonso, you figured, all right, that ship has sailed. There's no place, there's no room for Dominic Smith on this team. And all he does in his opportunities is rake. I mean, anytime you see Dominic Smith in a game, he's getting a couple of different hits. Do you believe that he can be an everyday outfielder? Because, you know, the Mets don't have the luxury of being able to use a DH. We know first base is going to be Pete Alonso's. So I'm very curious to see what Dom Smith's long-term role with the Mets is going to be. We know he's going to play now. We know he's helping this team. But do you think he has a skill set that can translate somewhere else, therefore he can actually be a part of this team for years to come?
Well, I think just to take into the rest of the year, and let's say the rest of this year goes the way we've seen it, and he's swinging the bat well, you got to find a place for him on the field. And if that means in left field and then late innings to first base, by the way, Alonso has played well enough where I don't think you have to take him out in late innings that defensively anymore. But if they decide to do that, okay, that's fine. That's a problem. But like, you could go through and find, you know, outfielders, four or five different outfielders throughout the other teams. And I'll name Kyle Schwarber with the Cubs, and I'll name Jose Martinez, who plays right field for the Cardinals, but is well below average as an outfielder. Just take those two in particular. They are well below average on the defensive side. And so, you know, Melky Cabrera, who's playing a lot for the Pirates, brutal outfielder. So Austin Riley with the Braves, rookie, that's not his best position. So if those teams can put left fielders that are below average out on the field on a nightly basis, why can't the Mets? Why can't the Mets? So I think if he's, as long as he's swinging the bat well, then leave him out there. You know what? If he makes a mistake, all right, you know, hopefully I would hit the mistakes. If it gets really bad, then you can put him back on the bench. But I think it's going to be playable. And if it's playable, then at least for the foreseeable future, I'd keep putting him out there.
Jim, let's move over to the Yankees. With the injury now to Domingo Germán, they still win on Luis Severino. It's as clear as day. They need to add a starting pitcher. Yep. When we were doing the thread the other day, you made the case for Marcus Stroman. I'm all in on Bumgarner. I'm a sucker, Jim, for that postseason experience. You know, the Yankees been knocking at the door. I know he's not the 2014 Madison Bumgarner, but I still think he's a pretty darn good pitcher. I mean, I know the Muncie incident, he was dead wrong on that, is going to take center stage, but he looked pretty darn good against the Los Angeles Dodgers on Sunday. Would you look at this trade market for Brian Cashman and basically say, it's Bumgarner, Stroman, or bust?
Well, so that depends on if Trevor Bauer is going to be available. And I think that's a sleeper guy to keep an eye on because Cleveland, you know, is so far out, and I'm not convinced that they can – that I don't think they can catch the Twins, number one. I think it's going to be hard for them to stay in the wild card with all these injuries that they've had. Now, Bauer hasn't been great, but he does – you do control him for a couple years. And for me, if Brian's going to be aggressive. We know that. Everyone in town knows he's going to be aggressive. But if he's going to give up, you know, quality talent, his preference would be what he did with Paxton, which is get controllable piece, you know, and you have Paxton here for a couple of years as well. So there aren't a lot of guys like that. Stroman's one, Bauer's another. Now, does that mean he's going to shy away from Bumgarner? No, it doesn't, because he's going to weigh the cost analysis like he always does. But you know, those are to me the three top guys, and whatever guy you can get, you know, sooner rather than later, I think that he should strike, and I think that he will. So the price tag for all of them is going to be high. Generally, when you get closer to the deadline, then the reality, you know, steps in. That's when you feel you're forced to move. You end up making a deal, you know, that whatever deal you can make, the best deal you can make at that point. There's no urgency to it now, which is, you know, a problem. If you're trying to add now, that's the biggest issue, is there's no urgency on the teams to trade them unless they get what they're asking for.
Jimmy, final one, and you're in this position where you're looking at certain guys and trying to figure out whether or not they're a fit for the New York market. I look at Trevor Bauer, and he's a very talented kid. There's no getting around that. He pitched well in the postseason a couple of years ago. He's got nasty stuff. He's had a proven track record. But there's something about that personality, fighting people on Twitter, you know, very quirky guy, where I say, if I'm an executive, if I'm in a front office, can this guy handle the pressure cooker that is New York? Like, when you guys were making deals, obviously you look at players, obviously you look at what they're doing on the field, but how much does that come into play? How much do you guys like weigh the idea of, is he the right fit for this sort of market?
You have to weigh that, JJ. You really do. I would say that, you know, I thought Sonny Gray could have handled New York. We found out later they couldn't. You know, after the struggles, he looked like a deer in headlights. We've talked about it. I know you have. We have. I have. And so you can get fooled by it, but you do put in a lot of time in that. You know, so you know the Yankees have made the evaluation that Zach Greinke, who also is quirky, couldn't handle New York, won't handle. They won't trade for him. And I'm not so sure, by the way, that that's accurate anymore. Like, I think he's grown to the point where he could handle it, but, you know, he's not the most media-friendly guy. And so, you know, I think that when you look at it from that perspective, it's almost like the Robinson Cano situation. When you're trading for Robinson Cano, you know there's going to be plenty of times where he's not going to run balls out. You have to be willing to deal with the fallout from that. Are you going to deal with Zach Greinke in the day or two that he pitches poorly and he's not there in his locker and the writers here in New York are going to hammer the crap out of him? Do you want to put up with that, you know, for the next couple of years? And most of the time the answer is no. So you know, that's one example of, you know, looking at the kind of the background, the makeup, and you know, you can get fooled on both sides of it. You know, we got fooled on Kenny Rogers. We thought Kenny Rogers could do it. I still can't hear the end of it from some of the Mets fans as Kenny Rogers walks in on the winning run, and we had Octavio Dotel on the bullpen. You probably were watching that game too.
Oh, I remember it well. Listen, Jimmy, it's sick that I can remember, like, I was talking about this with Zeal today. I remember the day-night doubleheader in 2000, like, vividly. Yeah. I remember the interference call. I remember Piazza Clemens. I could recite all this stuff. And then you asked me what I had for breakfast yesterday, and I'm like, I don't know. That's why I'm sick in the head, though, Jim. You know, that's why I do what I do.
Yeah. What was your best friend's name in seventh grade? I don't know. But I remember that Todd Zeal was definitely interfered with running around first base, and we filed an appeal because we protested the game.
Well, I remember it well. The great Jim Duquette, the former GM of the New York Mets. He's killing it right now on SNY, doing all the pre and post stuff. Jimmy, keep it up, man. I'll see you in the newsroom. Good suits. Keep looking sharp. All right, brother?
We'll see you soon, buddy. All right.
Attaboy. Bye. The great Jim Duquette. Good stuff there on the Yankees and the Mets. 877-337-6666. We got game 5 of the NBA Finals. All that more. It's a Monday edition of JJ After Dark right here on The Fan.